Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
It's Friday Night Racing on a Friday afternoon. If you're getting us live on our social channels, or it's Friday Night Racing at 8 o'clock on News Talk every Friday night. That's why we call it Friday Night Racing. We're very original around these parts. We'll bring you the Tote.com charity bet from Johnny a little bit later on. Still looking for that elusive winner, but we're going to talk a little bit of rugby and a little bit of horse racing today because Sean O'Brien is here with us. Sean, how are you doing?
Good. Very good.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You've got a bit of a golden touch at the minute with the horses. How long did you?
I touch you because it's certainly not happening for me at the moment.
How long? Did you have a runner in A-Town?
I did, yeah.
Still running?
Yeah.
All right.
But onwards and upwards. But the elusive winner is a bit harsh. We did have a good start about 2 months ago.
It's a long time ago. Yeah. First week out, we won.
This will be a better weekend, Sean.
Yeah. You hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you own or are involved in three separate horses, right?
Yeah, correct.
But Rowetta is the hot one.
Rivetta's the hot one at the minute, yeah. Hopefully the other two come good very soon. But yeah, she's been very impressive the last while.
Tell us your racing background. What's the crack with you?
Dad used to have a few broodmares at home. Was into point-to-pointing. That's where he used to bring us. That was his day out. A few beers. And we went since we were young. The whole family used to go.
Yeah. Point-to-point's mad. I've only been once up in Donegal. It's like this kind of other world that you don't know exists.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
It's proper racing, but it's tough. Like,
yeah.
Point-to-pointing is tough. And
the day I went, it lashed rain from the side. It was like one of those kind of, why do people... And then when you... obviously the rain passed in 10 minutes, you're like, this is amazing. It's like a little carnival in a small field.
Yeah. No, it's a cool place to be. Good atmosphere. Lots of, I suppose, ordinary people just trying to enjoy the whole day, you know?
Yeah. And so... If your dad had broodmares, did he breed horses to, were you riding, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I used to hunt a lot when I was younger.
Right, okay, yeah.
Got a bit big when I was 16 or 17, but that was the last time I remember hunting, yeah. But yeah, I used to hunt an awful lot.
Right.
So had a kind of a keen interest in horses as well growing up, but more so was towards like the cattle and farm and stuff at home. I grew fonder of as I got older, but there was always horses around, and he had a big interest in them. Still does to a certain extent. Loves putting a couple of euros each way on a horse most days. So
are most farmers kind of frustrated horse trainers somewhere along the way? They're like, geez, I wouldn't mind a little bit. Just one big horse, and I could forget about this.
My father is a trainer.
That's the dream, like.
Yeah. My father, I think he was a frustrated gambler rather than, and he's a farmer as well. He had a stint in London where he turned to the horses for a while, but he realised that it wasn't going to be sustainable, so he came home.
Yeah. All our fathers have one of those stories in the
yeah.
Which we won't bring to air because otherwise I won't be able to go home again in the future. And so, like, at that stage, do you kind of think you want to be involved in that, or like, you know, is farming always going to be the thing you do? And are you thinking at that stage you wouldn't mind having some horses on the side as well?
Yeah, farming is always the thing I'm going to be involved in, I'd say, for the rest of my life. But the horse side of things kind of came 8 or 9 years ago, probably, to me. A friend of mine had a horse, got involved with that, worked out pretty well for us. And then, you know, I've a keen interest in it. Don't get to as many race meetings as I'd like to, obviously, but...
Yeah.
Just interested in it as such, and it's just about the crack for me more so than anything else.
Okay, I was going to ask, is it like specific to National Hunt, or would you be interested in flat racing, or like, does it matter? Is it really about kind of getting everybody out together the same day with the same?
Yeah, that's what it's about more. I suppose National Hunt is probably what I more enjoy looking at, and there's a better buzz about it, I think. But the flat is kind of starting to take over now a little bit too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money involved in the flat now, and a lot of really good horses out there. So, you know, it's all integrated into one, really.
Yeah, no, totally. Your horses are with Jessica Harrington. I was just, like, in my head, Moon and Tolo are right beside each other. So, like, that's a handy old spin for you.
Yeah, it's handy. I suppose Jessica's yard as well has grown a lot over the last few years.
Fair setup, isn't it?
Fair setup. A pile of horses are now, and very good horses in the yard, and she's flying as well at the minute. So, glad I'm with her right now, anyway.
It's handy to have this, like, world-class operation right on your doorstep.
Correct.
That definitely helps. We're making a documentary, actually. Kevin Caban was down in the yard this week, and so that's going to be coming out in the next week or two. Let's play you this bit, though, because this is the first race of Rowetta. I think you had her a couple of days. Did you at that stage? You just...
Yeah, well, it wasn't a couple of days, but it was a couple of weeks, I think.
Right, okay, so just in time for Galway.
Just in time for Galway, yeah.
And I think Mark Enright's on board, and this is what happens. Have a look.
In the
the toad Irish EBF mares handicap. It's time to get the leader. Rovette on the outside as these two now begin to settle down to fight it out, and it's Rovette getting the better of a stable companion. Time to get the Lake Milan Clementina, and Rovette, who got in his first reserve, is powering up the hill for Mark Enright.
Yeah, so we had Mark Enright on the show, and he said that he took a phone call from you beforehand, and he was like, no, listen, I don't think she's got any chance today. So he said he ignored your phone calls for the hours afterwards, just in case you were a bit pissed off.
Yeah, Fish, we call him Fish, Mark Enright, that's his nickname, Fish. But yeah, I was delighted more so for him as well, just being a close friend of mine, and you know, to get a winner in Galway, to start off his week like that, yeah. You know, it was brilliant. But he done a great job on her, and in fairness, He wasn't over enthusiastic before the race, but he wasn't giving anything away either, you know. He said once he had her settled in the race, it's just she flew home, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, we had him in the week after, actually, and he was delighted with it. It was kind of, he was a bit concerned about what your reaction might have been.
He's probably still hung over from Galway after that. So.
He's definitely hung over after Limerick as well, won the All-Ireland, but most people dream of a winner in Galway to have two winners in the week at the one horse.
Savage going.
What's that process? So the Jessica comes to you and says, this guy's going, let's get him back out there straight away.
Exactly, yeah. See, most trainers have double up maybe in Galway from the start of the week to the end of the week. So there's always a few horses that they can throw out there. So yeah, Jessica basically said, look, he's fresh as she is, you know, this morning. That was the day after. We're going to put him back in at the weekend. And on you go, we said. So. Yeah, delighted, and then, you know, everyone was asking me, surely she won't have a chance today, and I said, watch this space. So I was absolutely delighted, because she improved an awful lot throughout the first race.
Yeah.
And she was fresh the next day, so, you know, it's nearly like match fitness.
Yeah.
So that's the way I was looking at it anyway.
Yeah, well, there seems to be, with Kate Harrington, and she was kind of talking about that, how they tell and how they judge the horses are getting fitter and fitter, and they do pre-season training. All that stuff is a mystery to us, but clearly there's a science from their perspective to it.
Yeah, of course there is. But it's like treating a human being. You know, you have to get them to a point where they're ready to play.
Yeah.
And when they're ready, then away with you.
Yeah. It's only a 4-year-old filly as well, so there could be still plenty there, you know. Mm. And she's by So You Think, and So You Think was a horse that would have been trained not that far away by Aidan. And he came from New Zealand, and he was a big hype horse, and now he's... That's one of the things I love about racing. You follow the horse, and then you follow his progeny down the line, and one of them is Rovette.
Yeah. Are you into all that kind of stuff as well? Like,
I'm not, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not. If I like the look of a horse, or, you know,
that's something you get into over time, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if Rovette has like her own,
yeah,
you know, horses down the line.
Yeah, if she was to go now, or to have a, you know, a foal down the line when she's finished up, like, then you'd have a keen interest in that side of things.
Yeah.
Not really now with me, no.
Would you breed one? On your ample land in Tullow.
Yeah, you know, I might go down that route eventually. We'll see.
That's when everything changes again, I think.
Yeah.
What way?
I'd say it's like nearly the equivalent of just having your first child in terms of horse racing parlance. Like that, it's like you had that horse before its inception. You chose what stallion to go, and the stallion might be because you wanted to mix stamina with speed on the dam, and the sire side might be a stamina that is first season, so he's fairly cheap. He's unproven, and then you follow that progress, you actually see the, you know, the foal after it's born straight away. You wait 2 years if it's a flat horse for it to run, 4 years if it's a jumps horse minimum. There'll be a lot of ups and downs along the way, and I'd say I've never bred a mare, but something down the line would be a beautiful thing to do.
Yes.
And it's, the possibilities are relatively endless. You don't know how good or bad the horse is going to be.
You just need the farmland.
Just need the farmland, yeah. My father, our land wouldn't be as good as it is in Tullow, so our land is planted now.
Come here, you got involved in ownership fairly early on. So, like, one of the things that we were talking about this last week, we were at Kilbeggan, and we met a couple of different syndicates. One of them was like a bunch of guards who have like 120 members. It's a racing club, and there's 90 different shares, so you can share in a share. You don't actually have to have a full share yourself. And then there was another syndicate, like, it's possible to do this on a shoestring if you want to, if you've got enough people involved, or you can go the whole hog and buy your own horse. There's a kind of a full scale of ways that people can access this.
Definitely, yeah. Like they say, you know, you're very unfortunate if your first bet wins. Like, and the first horse I got involved in actually turned out to be very good. So that was much to my misfortune, because I've been involved kind of, or certainly hooked with it ever since. And first horse we had was Operation Houdini, and there were about 10 of us involved, 20 when he was winning. And he went on to be like second in a Troy Town and thrown out second in a Cork National, and he was 8-1 for the Welsh National, and he was favoured for the Paddy Power.
Right.
So he cost, like, I think he was 14 grand, he never won, and we thought he could. It took him about 12 goals to actually win a race of any description. He kept coming second, and then he just improved. And we had days out, like, at the biggest with Chepstow, Navan, Leopardstown, Fairy House, and we became great friends. Like, you know, I'd say I was at four weddings of Syndicate members, and unbelievable crack. And, like, what I would say is, if the horse is any good, the race itself is only, it's only a part of the actual story. So the fun you have now, particularly with the proliferation of WhatsApp now, because you can have great crack along the way all week, you know, debating, will the ground be right? Who's going to ride him? Trainer is no good. Trainer is great. He's telling us lies. He's telling the truth. Like, he's optimistic. He's pessimistic. And I think if you can do it cheaply, like if you get 10 people, it'll cost about 120 quid a month each.
Yeah,
it's very doable.
It's like, totally doable.
Yeah, that's the main thing with a syndicate. It's affordable for everybody. You know, it's about 1400 to 1600 euros a month to train an animal. So if you have 20 people in that over the year, you know what I mean. It's 20 grand roughly. You know what I mean. So it's a grand each if you have 20 in it, up to 20 in a syndicate. So it's cheap enough for the entertainment you're going to get and the buzz and the crack you're going to have. And, you know, the days out you'll have, hopefully.
You
and obviously prize money.
Exactly.
Rovetta's, you know, cooled about 50 grand already. Like,
not bad.
Like, yeah, it's good. Like, the syndicate are delighted. Like,
yeah,
you know
of
what
course.
I mean?
So you missed the first one. Were you there for the second one in Galway?
No.
You missed the boat.
Missed the boat. I wasn't, I couldn't. I was training that week and I wasn't travelling down on Sunday. I was wrecked after the week. So, you know, I was watching carefully though.
Are you going to be allowed now to go, or will you be one of those like, no, he's not allowed to come, he's a jinx?
Well, would you believe I didn't go the last day purposely.
The Cora.
I actually said that in the Cora. Right. I was they were ringing going, are you going today? And I said, I'm actually staying away purposely. So I didn't, so I probably won't go.
Oh no, did she finish second or third the last time, or did she win?
One again.
So it's 3-3.
Three. Yeah, so all's good.
She won off 79 the last day on the flat. She's gone up to 88 now, which is bringing her into the black type territory that is kind of jargon for a lot of people. Mm. But black type is basically, if she finishes placed in a listed or group race, down the line at the sales, when you come to her page in your book, there'll be black type. It'll literally be black type, that this mare is a black type, and that makes her quite a bit more valuable.
Yes.
Right.
So that's definitely achievable.
Yes,
like.
that's achievable. So that's probably what we're hoping for now. Like, she's entered in the stall next week.
Right.
You go to that?
No, I won't travel down that far. And then Champions Weekend is
certainly
well.
Not on
maybe
the
back to Galway. Maybe back to Galway.
She's right, entering so. The Lartigue, actually, which... This is a special race for many reasons. Do you know what the Lartigue was? So the Lartigue, I'm a bit of a rail nerd. The Lartigue was a monorail. It was Ireland's only monorail, possibly one of the first monorails in the world. But it ran from the Stoll to some other part of Kerry. But it was a very unique thing at the time. But they named the hurdle after it. And there's the Lartigue Museum in the Stoll. But it also honours Liam Healy, the race. Since Liam died, the photographer who was from the Stoll, really, really popular, of course. Pat and Liam Jr. now are carrying the Healy name with all the photographs, but it would be a special race to win. And I'd say she will be, if not favourite, you know, bang up there at the top of the betting. It'd be a lovely race to win. And it's worth a nice bit of money.
Yeah. And so is that a graded or a listed race?
It's a grade B handicap hurdle.
Is that good enough to get to the black type?
No, so like the black type, she could achieve black type, but the black type she'd more likely be looking for is on the flat, but she could do it over jumps as well.
Okay.
It's 32.5 grand for the winner, so...
Happy days.
It would be all right.
And so, hang on. So this is over hurdles?
2 miles.
Two miles over hurdles.
Only for four-year-olds.
Okay. So she can become a flat horse again?
She can mix it.
She can mix up.
That's pretty unusual, isn't it?
No, it's
happening more and
that's
more.
What happened in Galway. Like, so we were hurdles first set.
And
flat on the Sunday.
Okay.
Be like you playing rugby and a bit of hurling at the weekend, kind of, you know?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
she,
yeah.
Like, that's the beauty of her. She is... If you have a horse like that, she has two options of making you prize money, like, and possibly even fences in time, like.
Talented mare.
Yeah. So how did you pick her? Like, what's that process? Apart from getting a bit lucky, but like.
Yeah, I suppose like, well, we didn't pick her as such. I suppose she, I think Kate Harrington was who picked her out first. So Kate obviously saw something in her at the sales.
They bought her for 3 grand. That's all out there. That's amazing, this is how this process works.
Exactly. So she was very cheap, obviously. Yeah. And then came to me with her and said,
this is good, have a look.
Yeah, have a look. So, and that's where it started, really, to be honest.
Yeah, happy days.
And so, you get lucky every now and again.
Do you get to name her? Is that that's your name?
No.
She came from France. Pascal Barry used to train her, so she was named whatever the name means. But if you move a horse to Hong Kong, you can change its name.
You obviously named the Tullow Tank, or did somebody name that for you?
I had a share in that horse.
Yeah,
as well.
He was a right horse.
Yeah, he was a right horse. And how that came about was when they were naming him, they rang me to ask could they use the name.
And you're like, yeah, for a leg.
I said, you can.
You had paid exactly. His trademark.
So, he was he worked out brilliantly as well. And
he wouldn't want to be no good now.
No.
He's a Tullow Tank.
Like myself, he's injured as well.
What about Coolaboola? Is that was another one of yours?
Coolaboola, yeah. Another one of ours. Didn't work out great for us.
Right. That's the other side of this that we should just warn
that's
people.
The other side of it. Yeah, but sure, that's all.
The value of your investment may rise as well as for fall as well as rise.
Yeah, exactly. But another nice horse, but didn't do the trick for us really.
And are you going down to like check on the horse semi regularly and kind of just have a look? And
yeah, I pop into the yard every now and again. She's a great setup there now. They've built more stables. Harrington's have and new walker and new galloping and. You know, it's really kind of grown down there a lot, so and it'll continue to do so, I think, when she's in this kind of form.
Yeah,
that's another thing, sorry, Ger, this, it's not all about going to the races. Like, say, if you have a horse, say, with Damien English, you can go up to the beach and watch him on the beach in the morning exercising and go to the yard afterwards. And it's actually a lovely, lovely experience to see your horse and see the horse in the yard and just feel part of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you grew up around horses and animals, so it's probably less of a you're not like, wow, I haven't seen this before.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like at the same time, they are like the best horses in the world. Alpha Centauri, it looks like it's going to be one of the horses.
Yeah. Special horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk to you a bit about rugby?
You can, yeah.
How are you getting on? What's the prognosis at the moment?
Good, yeah. Coming along. I suppose I know where I stand more so in the next couple of weeks, but feeling good after doing an awful amount of work the last 8-9 weeks. Coming right now and back on the field hopefully next week or the week after and then take from there to see how the body is.
And are you relatively calm about this whole process now because it's something that you're so used to, like coming back from injury, or are you at your wit's end thinking, oh Jesus?
I'd be lying if I didn't say I just want to get out now and play kind of thing. But these are the crucial weeks where you need to be patient and
be calm,
say to yourself, look, you'll be back when you're fully right. Don't go back a week too early or 2 weeks too early.
Yeah.
And do something silly. So, you know, I've learned over the years, I suppose, to have a bit more patience now and go back when I'm fully right.
You've seen your teammates have like all sorts of different experiences where some have had to retire early. Some have looked like they're on the verge of retirement and then come back kind of with like... you know, there was definitely a lot of doubt about Cian Healy's future, and now here he is back, absolutely dominant, one of the best players in the world at his position. So, like, are you prepared for any eventual outcome at this point, or do you kind of just have to go, I'm ignoring all the negatives and going straight for the positives?
Yeah, I don't look at a negative as a negative anyway. If something like that had to happen, you know what I mean? That's just life. And, you know, I'll have to cross that bridge when I come to it.
But you prefer if it was down the road, though.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, any day we go out, you could be, you know what I mean? That could be it. But, you know what I mean? It's you're managed in such a way now that, you know, you should be ready to play. And I'm feeling so fit at the minute, and I've still a couple of weeks to go.
Yeah.
Feeling very strong, you know what I mean? So I'm probably in the best physical shape I can be in right now. So I've no doubt in my head what I'm going to do when I come back and how long I'll be able to play for going forward. This is why we put such a massive emphasis on the last 3-4 months of training and getting my body in the best possible shape possible.
And is it something that you're concerned about from a mental perspective, that like the next time, you know, should even just watching, say, Keane O'Sullivan in the All-Ireland football final, the first sprint is the time his hamstring goes, and it must have been in his head that when he opens up and reading Rob Kearney talking about, there were times last season when he was like, I don't really want to get to a full sprint, but if I don't, then there's going to be a try or I'm not going to get the ball.
Yeah.
And you just have that thought in your head, I actually have to do this.
Yeah, you'd feel sorry for someone like Keane, because that's the second time now that's happened to him really in a final.
Yeah.
But he's had ongoing hamstring issues, I think. And it's just a case, I suppose, he's after working so hard throughout the year and playing so well throughout the year. Next minute you get to that stage and you could be just after overdoing it in training or something like that. But it's a bit different for me coming back in now. I've had such a good run without games. I've had lots of time to work on different aspects you know what I mean, and getting myself strong in all the different areas. So mentally wise, I just want to get out there and get back into it and roll up the sleeves again and get back playing some good rugby.
Two questions about that. The one about where you're like, look, that's just life, and if it happens, it happens. I presume you wouldn't have thought like that when you were 25 or 26, that you're at a stage of your life now where you're like, look, loads of other stuff going on, still really desperately want to do this, but like I can be at least a little bit more even-handed about it.
Yeah, yeah, you think you're invincible at that age. Yeah. You think, like, you know, you're loving life. You never crosses your mind at all about finishing, but yeah, definitely over the past few years. And in fairness, Rugby Players Ireland and Leinster and all, they encourage us now to prepare ourselves for life after rugby. So it is a thing that I've probably focused on more so over the last 2-3 years to make sure I'm in a good place when I do finish. So it's not just you're done and, you know what I mean, what, where am I going next?
Yeah.
You have kind of a something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So, that always is in the back of your head, but in the short term, you're thinking, Rugby.
And totally. And the other side of that is that, like, the miles on the clock thing seems to be, particularly in contact sports like rugby, a very realistic thing. There are only so many times that you can actually hit a ruck without your body kind of saying, enough. Like, you've had a couple of years now where you haven't hit the rucks as many times as you probably should have been doing if you were fit. Like, do you feel like there is a possibility that you can have a different end to your career that will go a bit longer than maybe you would have anticipated?
Yeah, definitely the long breaks like this one, there are 5-6 months, they do give you a bit more time, definitely, I think. So that's what I mean, but when you get these breaks, you try and fix all the other little bits and pieces that were bit creaky or wasn't just right, and then you come back with a real good, you know, you're 95%, everything is fit again. So it's, that's the exciting part of it, that you could bring yourself to another level.
Yeah.
Than you're at.
Do rugby players worry about like of after rugby in terms of just what you put your body through, and I suppose since the professional era how it has changed in terms of strength conditioning and that?
Yeah, I don't think we worry
about it.
I wouldn't have many conversations with any lads about, you know, how's your body going to be afterwards? We're professional rugby players. You know that you're going to have certain things that are, you know, a bit sore or so on. We're in a contact environment. You do contact every week. You roll up your sleeves. You know what I mean? It's a tough lifestyle. It's a tough profession to be in. So you're going to have bits and pieces. But, you know, I wouldn't change any of it for the world anyway. I love it. That's what I love doing. I love playing rugby. I love training. I love being out there with all the lads. You know, so those kind of things are all probably stuff you think about afterwards.
I guess your position gives you a bit more longevity than, you know, a winger or whatever as well, in theory.
Well, our back rowers usually, we probably take more impacts than any other player in the field, I'd say, if you were to look at the stats. But wingers, sure, they're only out there hanging around. They don't do much, do they?
Waiting for the ball.
Yeah, we're the ones trying to get it for them.
Sam Warburton's just retired, actually. Like, and he obviously had a series of really serious injuries that he managed to get back for the last Lions tour. He's been talking about the position of the jacklers and the jackler needing to be protected. Is this something that you've kind of been keeping an eye on, that, like, as somebody who's centrally involved in that in games?
Yeah, well, I've mentioned a few weeks ago that, you know, it is probably something that the referees need to have a bit more understanding about, in terms of, you know, how long do we have to survive the jackal, for instance. You know, if we survive the first one, is he going to give the second lad a chance to, you know, to get us off the ball?
Yeah.
Or in some cases, some referees are going to give the third lad a bite of the cherry. So,
yeah.
You know, other than that, though, it's a part of rugby, but it is a place where, I suppose, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position, you know, over the ball. But for us, you know, that's what we're developed for. That's why we do the strength training, and that's why we practice these skills and training. So it's just another part of the game, you know, that we really train hard for. So
it needs to be protected then, right?
Yeah, well, you could say that about every other facet of the game too, though. That's the thing, but maybe a little bit of guidance around it.
Yeah.
And how long do we have to be there for? Would be my only thing on it, but you know what I mean? That's up to different referees ref it differently anyway, so
yeah.
You're not going to keep everyone happy.
And Leinster obviously have, I think it's been described as a target on their backs this year, because obviously every game was won last year, and you were the best team in Europe last year, so that means everybody wants to beat you this year. Like, it is something that you guys have experience of. Some of you definitely have more experience of it than others. Does that just change the mindset in terms of how you approach every game?
Yeah, it does a little bit, because when you do win trophies, and I suppose you win them in the fashion we did last year as well, other teams are looking to get that, you know, the edge on you all the time, and to see can they get to that level. And we're no different. We have to try and stay above the curve now all the time and not let performances dip, not let standards slip, you know, and make sure we're doing what we're saying we're doing, basically. So it's, you know, it's a real healthy environment to be in at the minute, Leinster, and there's so much competition there as well. It's absolutely brilliant to see.
Is that the thing that keeps everybody from getting complacent?
Well, absolutely. But as well as being a professional, you know what I mean? You don't want to...
I know you say that, but it's like, but human beings, you get slapped on the back and everybody goes, you're great.
You get slapped on the back in Leinster as well, or slapped in the face, one or the other, if you're not performing well, or you won't be picked.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the nature of it, and that's the competitive environment you want.
Especially your position, like you were like at the start of last year. Okay, that's okay. Everybody understands exactly what the first choice back row is, and then you get injured, and suddenly Dan Levy comes out and is like Lions caliber. It's like, all right, well, it's pretty steep competition now all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. But you look at all our back rows. You know, they can all play everywhere as well. We have, in fairness, we're very lucky to have the amount of back rows we have and the quality of back rows we have. But that's a healthy competition. There's a huge respect between the players as well, you know what I mean?
Are you a bit like Rowetta then? You're going to have to do 6 and 8 and 7 as well, week in, week out, is that
well,
like?
I'll do whatever I have to do, you know, to get back in the team, but it's, I'm adaptable that way.
Yeah, I think you have to.
Munster going to narrow the gap this year.
Will Munster narrow the gap? Yeah, I'd say they will. I'd say, sure, the coach, I suppose, will develop him again this year. You know, he only came in last year, so, and a few new players. A few good additions, obviously. So
from around a tie.
Yeah, but like it'll be competitive as ever, you know. Munster aren't a million miles away from it.
How will Joey Carberry be welcomed in like Dublin when he plays up here, do you think?
He'd be very welcomed with open arms.
Do you talk to Joe Schmidt actually about racing? Because not only is Schmidt running tonight in Kilbeggan, but Joe has had a winner, I think, this week, even in Roscommon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I haven't spoke to him really much about it. I know he has a keen interest in it, obviously, but. We don't get time when you're in camp or, you know, you're having a coffee with him to talk about horses. He's more important stuff on his mind.
I think he'll be on something next Friday.
Yes, yeah, next Friday we're going to be coming live from the Leopardstown Inn from 7 o'clock to 8:30, and Joe Schmidt's going to be there, Johnny Murt's going to be there, you're going to be there.
And John Small, who was one of the many patrons enjoying the beach life at Leopardstown, at Laytown yesterday.
Yeah. How many Dublin footballers were there? Were they having the crack? Their Instagram account was definitely
one of his colleagues was supposed to go, but
they're still going.
They are.
They've had a hard week. Like, you know, the way he was explaining it to me, it sounded a lot harder than any sort of training that Mikko would have done with the Kerry teams back in the day. Like, a really, really hard week. Like, the cumulative hours slept would be
minimal.
But quite a few of them love their racing.
And, yeah.
He particularly does. And. We were having a joke about how many selfies requests he would get, but it was something like 10, I think, by the end of the day.
That's not too bad.
I think people are just a bit afraid of him because he gets sent off so often. They don't
but it turns out he's kind of a nice, quiet.
He's a great lad, but loves his horses. So he's another lad that I'm kind of working on getting into ownership as well.
Yeah.
But he just seems a bit wise at the moment.
It shouldn't be too long. Well, listen, Sean, best of luck with the recovery from injury and stuff and with the horses.
Thanks a million.
Should we be back in Rowetta every time she runs? Is it Rowetta or Rowetta?
Rowetta.
Rowetta with the V. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you should be.
Yeah. All right.
Checking what mark she's gone up to for Lartigue, which like would definitely be a logical race. 1-1-1, and she won in Galway off 100, but she bolted up. So I actually would say she'll be quite whatever Willie has in the race. Obviously, you know, your fellow Carlow-based man, but she's going to have a big chance.
Grand. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that one. We'll stick the card up for the 205 at Kempton, and you can scooch out there. Seem very subtle about that. Not even supposed to mention it. Thanks a million, Sean. Thanks for being with us.
Come here. Actually, I meant to ask.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law and his son are dying for tickets for the New Zealand game. So, Jeez, that's not what I was hoping to hear. But
there's about 100 orders in already.
That doesn't sound good, Joe.
See you. Thanks a million.
That does not sound good.
Is
it going to be absolutely impossible to get tickets for that?
Well, I mean, it did sell out a long time ago. They are the top two teams in the world.
Any chance of winning the World Cup?
Ireland. I mean, there's the man to ask.
I was told by a few good judges that New Zealand could not be beaten come the World Cup.
We did a piece last week with a New Zealand journalist who had already written the piece, hand us the trophy now, it's a done deal. That piece has got 50,000 views with a lot of New Zealanders angrily commenting on the hair. Stop giving the game away. Really, they're like,
but it was slightly chastising
him for, no, not at all.
No.
They think they're going to do it. Of course they do. Here, let's look at the 205 accountant. So you picked three races for us this week, and we are going to have a charity bet courtesy of the tote.com. Yeah. That's going to be in Navan. So we'll get to the Navan one in a minute, but these are the big races this weekend. Kempton and Haydock are the main ones.
Well, this race is absolutely insane for a Group 3. Like, this is... I don't know what you... Like, this would be like Ireland and New Zealand, but classed as a game in front of, like, maybe 5,000 people at a provincial venue, because this is an all-weather track, which... Actually, in terms of its future, was up in the air. But I mean, if Kempton racegoers don't go to see this, British Racing's in trouble. In Able running against Crystal Ocean, two of the best middle distance horses in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. In Able would have been.
Why is it a Group 3? I don't understand how that happens. So if you've got like the two best horses over a distance, why does this not suddenly automatically become?
Yeah,
a like higher rated race.
So the rating of the race would depend on. I think it's like the last five renewals in the average kind of rating band. But Enable running in this is kind of like the Tolo Tank kind of having a friendly game before he comes back for, an autumn international. Because her main aim would be the Ark. And I saw her in Shantee last year when the Ark was in Shantee, and it was a pleasure to see her. She was last year's master. She was last year's Alpha Centauri, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
She developed into this ridiculously good filly who basically beat the colts doing handstands. But she hasn't been seen since the Ark. So this is a Group 3 with a view, I would presume, to running in the Ark in a month's time. So you'd imagine she'll be hitting peak fitness come Paris. But she rocks up in the Group 3 and she's taken on the 129-rated Crystal Ocean. Now, his participation in this is very, very surprising. To run a horse of his calibre in a race like this, like, but if you were to say to the owner, like, I'm going to run Crystal Ocean in a Group 3 there at Kempton, should be a penalty kick, and then he's running against Enable. So it's absolutely like anomalous to a large extent that this could happen. But Weekender, who's by Frankel, who will probably make the pace in the race. I'm going to take a stab on him at around about 14, 16 to 1. Because if Enable is a little bit lacking fitness, this horse will stay. He's very, very gutsy. And I imagine that he will make the running. And just at the price, I'm going to give him a little shout.
Okay, and why?
Why? Because he's a big price in a five-horse race. Actually, in terms of his weights, versus he's getting £5 off Crystal Ocean, which shouldn't be enough, but gives him a bit of a squeak. And he's actually, I think he's still progressing. He stays further. He's very, very game. You can imagine she'll, as we say in racing, she could blow up in the final furlong or two. She just needs to run a small bit. And stranger things have happened. He would be well able to win a normal Group 3. And this one might be a little bit more difficult, but he has a chance.
Okay, all right. So the other races that we want to talk about, the 425 also, Kempton.
Yeah, the 425 is a race for two-year-olds. No Irish representation. Aidan O'Brien has 10 sovereigns. Actually, I was quite stupid. This horse is by no name ever. And someone said, this horse is very well named, 10 sovereigns. And I was like, it's like 10 sovereigns is part of the lyrics of No Name Ever. 10 sovereigns, right? The landlady's eyes
open. Okay,
yeah. But he's a sensational prospect. But he's not here. But I think Conchek could do the job for Clive Cox. Get a bit of a toe into the race from Quiet Endeavour. Conchek was actually behind a Ballydoyle trained horse last time, but I think can go better here.
Okay, and then Haydock, the 4:15. This is also on Saturday.
Without a question, you would think the race of the day until a certain Enable rocks up in a Group 3.
And that is a bit mad. Is it just that they wanted to, like, why would Crystal Ocean not pull out then at that stage?
I don't really know the thinking behind running Crystal Ocean. And it's really, really strange to drop a horse of his calibre, who's been running in the top grade Group 1 races, into a Group 3 in the sort of the middle slash end of his campaign. I don't really know the thinking. It's like as if they just wanted a spectacle for the fans. Because this will be. It's a cracker of a race. And the betting will be interesting as well, because Enable... It's just how fit is she? But Harry Angel has a terrible record at Ascot, and the last time he was totally upset in the stalls and basically lost his race before it started. He's been given a break. Clive Cox has said his work has been impeccable, and he is the class act here. Aidan O'Brien runs Gustav Klimt, who's had a reasonable campaign without winning, but shouldn't be up to this. If Harry Angel gets out, he should win.
Gustav Klimt's a huge price.
Yeah, 25 to 1. I wouldn't back him at 50-1, 100-1. It shouldn't be up to it. But he's just going back to breeding. He's by Galileo, so he would be a very, very rare Galileo Group 1 winner over 6 furlongs. I think Clemmy was the only horse to do that who's still in training this year.
All right. A reminder, Friday Night Racing is sponsored by GoRacing.ie. Just wanted to ask you a little bit about lay time before we get to our charity bet.
What a day out. What a day out. It really was. It was just, and there was such a good buzz there.
It was now, a lashing rain early in the morning.
I woke up and it was so grey, like you could barely see the building beside you, and I was like, this does not sound good. But by the time we got to Laytown, got off the train, and it was a lovely, it was like old times, you get off the train and you go to the races, and everyone was, so many people travelling by train, and there was a little bar.
Is there a stop in Laytown on the day of the races?
Laytown, yeah.
Right.
There's a stop in Laytown, full stop. If you're on the commuter...
The Enterprise ain't stopping, so it's one of the commuter trains.
It's one of the commuter trains, I think it goes to Drogheda, but if you're on the commuter belt, like the likes of Laytown and Gormanstown would be a very attractive place to live because they're by the beach and you're in work in without all the traffic in like under an hour.
Yeah.
It's actually a lovely part of the world, but... So the like you walk to the track in 10 minutes. It's the only racetrack in Europe, I think, run on a beach.
Yeah.
6 races. They have stalls. The races are run over 6 and 7 furlongs.
So they're sprints.
Pretty much like. And the most remarkable thing about it was so many English visitors. So, and they were there to race at Laytown. And the Melbourne 10 Syndicate, basically Jamie Osborne trained horses in the main. A load of, I think, quite well-off English people. They basically aimed a load of horses at Laytown and had 3 winners. So they took,
right.
Yeah, so the standard of racing at Laytown, because of their interest, has gone up like quite a bit. And it was just a pleasure to be involved, you know, and there was such a good vibe there. Now, if it were raining, obviously, it makes a mess of it, but...
Yeah. And what's the difference going as an owner from being a punter and like, I mean, obviously you're used to going as a journalist, so it's completely different, but like, you're going as an owner, is there just a different vibe to the whole experience?
Definitely, and like the horse I was involved in was running the last as well, which is kind of ideal because it just builds up to it. And it's just, I know it's kind of formulaic, but like talking to the trainer and the jockey beforehand as he gets the leg up and you see him in your colours and he shakes your hand and you just feel like you're actually part of it, like you really are. And if the horse does happen to win, like I have to say, like the first time Operation Houdini won, it was in a moderate enough amateur riders handicap in Punchestown. It was some buzz, like it was the fact that he'd been second 4 or 5 times. I remember one of the lads in the syndicate, we were getting a bit exasperated by it all, and I remember saying to him, what do you make of tomorrow? And he goes, Chester, we'll be confident. We're always confident, aren't we? And I go, can you even afford to back him at this stage? And he goes, I can't afford not to back him at this stage. And he won. But it's a great buzz. And you can see how much it means to the trainer and the owner as well. Even the smaller winners mean a lot. And a winner at Laytown certainly means a lot to a lot of people. And because I'm involved with the Damien English Yard, he trains literally up the beach like a few miles. So it's special for him as well. And I think it's a meeting that he'll target now as well.
Yeah. All right. That's great. And definitely next year, I think we'll probably organise a
jolly up.
Yeah, it's the right thing.
You're back. So you're back in Dublin for, like, we were back in Dublin for, unfortunately, we were back for the to watch the Wales game.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful experience. If I were to recommend one like Irish race meeting, obviously it would be a bit mad, but like Laytown would certainly be a viable one.
Yeah, okay. So this week, with thanks to the tote.com, we've got another €100 charity bet for the Irish Injured Jockeys. We're going for a simple winner, place or each way bet this week. Coney Call in the 4:10 at Navan on Saturday, a price we're around about 13-2 at the moment.
Yeah, and I got to mention, we absolutely bombed on the trifecta last week.
But one out of the three.
1 out of the 3.
Yeah.
Not too bad. It's a tough race now, in fairness.
Yeah.
But there was a 13 grand dividend. So that we were
in the right.
The theory was somewhat correct.
Yeah.
But we didn't, you know, but, you know, he who dares wins, as Rodney, and as Del Boy says to Rodney. And we're going to dare with Connie Hall tomorrow. This is much more realistic now, Ger. This may well win. Trained by Anthony McCann in County Monaghan, of all places. And I think you can't overstate how important trainers like him and Andy Oliver and Tyrone are, because they're in racing backwaters, but they're keeping the game alive and they're of huge interest to their locality when they have a winner. And of course, Anthony would have replaced the late Oliver Brady, who was really one of the characters of racing. And I think people will fondly remember Oliver, but the show goes on in his absence, and Anthony's doing a good job. His horse are in good nick, and I think this horse has a huge chance in the 4:10.
Okay, I,
for apprentices tomorrow.
In terms of...
go for a win bet.
Are you? At 32, okay.
It's a handicap with 18 runners, but let's go for the win.
Yeah, those they're good bets to have the trifecta on because it's such a big field and that's why the dividend's so big on them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, if you win it, obviously.
Yeah, which obviously we didn't do yet. So would you not just go each way and try and make a bit of money for the charity, no?
I want to make more money for them.
Yeah, but what if we finish a second?
Injured jockeys, they do a great job and I'm not doing a particularly good job for them of late. The pressure is on, as you rather crudely alluded to earlier on.
Keep an eye on thetote.com or indeed the Tote's social media to see what dividend the trifecta pays tomorrow. Is there anything else that we should be talking about from this week?
Well, the Listowel Festival starts on Sunday. Again, I don't know how
the
many...
The second one that you would recommend if you had only one thing to go to Listowel.
There seem to be about a dozen like unique Irish meetings. Like, you know, there's something unique about this and that.
Listowel has a bunch of American sports writers who come over and just sit there and drink Guinness and talk to the descendants of John B. and experience the whole thing and then go and write these amazing epic pieces of like why this is a slice of Irlandia or whatever the Americana equivalent is.
Yeah, it's a unique place and, you know, in fairness, it does have a really proud literary tradition and I'm going down myself staying in Killarney if anyone has any advice for some nice things to do in Killarney, but because the store is actually very hard to get accommodation in because it's so popular. But
how far is that trip?
I think it's about 40 minutes.
Right.
But they're actually two very similar tracks in Killarney. Killarney's a spectacular place to go racing, but Listowel has more of a kind of like a harvest festival, farmers meeting to it. Like it just has a kind of, it's a very, very much the grassroots, very no frills, like it's down to earth experience, huge crowds. And it used to have the monorail. And the monorail was such that if Ger sits there and there's nobody, there's an odd number of passengers, they used to have to put like a bag of spuds to balance the monorail.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's mad.
And we all remember the Simpsons episode of the monorail, but there actually was a monorail in Ireland. And you can go to the museum and hopefully back the winner of the L'Artigue. But it's a great meeting, Listowel. And it's Brendan Duke actually had a great line on his blog this week. He was saying how Brendan is the son of the trainer and he does blogs and media work. Great character in racing. But he was saying how he was at a wedding once. And you know the way in an Irish wedding, you get to the residence bar at whatever time. Mad o'clock like, and he was talking to an English lady. She said, we don't do this in England, like 12:30, 1 o'clock, we go to bed. And Brendan was kind of making an analogy about this in terms of Irish festivals like Galway and Listowel, which are 7 days. Brendan was like, they probably were 5-day festivals, but people just wouldn't go home.
Yeah.
And I actually thought it was perfect analogy for Listowel. And it's hard to go home from Listowel.
Yeah, so we'll see you in a couple of weeks, basically, is what you're
especially
saying.
Especially if you can go to the monorail museum.
Join us next week for more of Johnny's odd obsessions. But Johnny, good stuff. Thanks very much. Enjoy your trip.
We love the train, don't we?
We do love the train, yeah.
Train to Laytown.
Right, that is it from Friday Night Racing this week. We hope you've enjoyed it. We will be back next week on the radio at 8 o'clock, next Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. If you are listening to this on the radio, make sure you subscribe to youtube.com/offtheball because then you'll get notifications about the fact that we actually do Friday Night Racing on Friday afternoon. I realise it's a bit confusing, but we think it works. We hope you're enjoying it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at Off The Ball, or of course you can leave comments under the live stream, or indeed if you're listening to this on the radio this evening. Good man, thanks very much for joining us. 53106.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off The Ball.
And they're off. Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.